Welcome to Everything Belongs, a podcast for those living, creating, leading, and thriving while in the deep end of life. I'm your host, Madison Morgan, leadership coach, creative consultant, and speaker. I coach soulful visionaries and go-getting mavericks who desire to create art of their lives and take their work both deeper and higher. In this show, I'll be bringing you an overflow of conversations with my favorite thought leaders, teachers, healers, and creatives who inspire me to live more fully in my own power, worth, and wholeness, along with offering some episodes where I share my own practical insights, behind-the-scenes peeks into my process, and tools I use on my own journey. There will not be much we shy away from here because at this table, everything belongs. Therefore, you can expect me to ask the uncomfortable, juicy questions. You can expect that you'll hear people you disagree with on the podcast and maybe even ideas you've never previously considered. I trust you with your own discernment as we take this deep dive. You can expect to laugh, cry, learn, and be challenged by the guests as they share their diverse experiences and views of the world. It's my hope through learning to see that all of it belongs that you will develop a more sovereign way of holding yourself so you can playfully go after the life, relationships, and career you are made for, to let all parts of yourself have a seat at the table, to lead and create from your deepest truth and become your own source of validation, all because you finally know you're worthy of it. All that's required to get started, that you show up curious and willing. Let's dive in. Well, hello everyone and welcome to September. I cannot believe we are already in September and here in the Northern Hemisphere in Missouri, today is the first day of like true crisp fall weather. I've been looking forward to it. I've been dressing for it and it has not really been here until today. And so I'm so grateful to be here with you enjoying from my office window the leaves, which are still green. They're not fall leaves yet, but I know right outside that window is crisp fall air. I'm feeling the shift of season in the air. And for those of you in the Southern Hemisphere, I'm sure you're excited for spring to be coming. And as we make this transition, I'm personally just upping my care. I'm doing a sober September. And although alcohol isn't really something that I have struggled with, I'm really excited to clear my mind and be really in sobriety for the month of September in a more deep way in a number of areas in my life. So I'm making the transition into fall, making some personal changes that feel more in alignment with myself and choosing myself. And I just make that invitation to you as well, like as you're listening to this and shifting seasons, if you're in the Northern Hemisphere, of course, into fall, and if you're in the Southern Hemisphere into spring, just asking what needs to be shifted and let go. I'm also recording this right now on the new moon in Virgo. So it's a Virgo sun, it's a Virgo moon, and it's feeling very like cleansing out and purifying. So just feeling in that energy myself today, I thought I would share. And I'm so excited to share today's conversation with you because unusually I actually recorded it this week and I'm releasing it the week after it was recorded. And usually I record my podcasts in batches and release them and I kind of trickle them out. But after I had this conversation with Annie DeChiru and I found out about her upcoming training on September 21st and 22nd, depending on which time zone you're in, I wanted to get this conversation out immediately. So Annie is the founder of Uplifting Studios. It's a platform dedicated to supporting online business owners to build culturally and racially diverse, inclusive, and equitable businesses. And so even if you don't have an online business, this conversation is so important to be continuing DEI or diversity, equity, and inclusion work. Even if you're not a coach, even if you're not a consultant, even if you're not an entrepreneur, but if you are, even more so, because that's exactly what Annie does. I really actually met Annie through acquaintances and friends at Beautiful You Coaching Academy, where we were both first trained to become life coaches. And so you've heard me speak to the CEO of Beautiful You Coaching, Julie Parker. You've heard me speak to Ellie Swift, who was my main actual connection to Annie and introduced Annie and I. And what I absolutely love about Annie, and I've heard everyone rave about her, and this has been true in my experience as well, is that she has such a graceful, gentle spirit and passion for this work and approaches it in a way that people who have felt that it was unapproachable for them feel like they can have an entry point into the work. And Annie is going to explain a little bit about why that is and why her take is different and why she's resourced right now as a Black woman to be doing this work. So she actually has a training coming up, and I've mentioned that she does DEI work for online businesses. Her program is called Represented, but if you are curious after listening to this episode about learning more about her work, please go to her website. It's in the show notes. It's upliftingstudios.com.au/represented, because she has a free training coming up that gives you a taste of her business and a taste of the work she does inside of her signature offer. Represented. It's called Your Business and Representation, What the Lack of Representation is Costing You and What You Can Do to Change That. And when she told me she had this training coming up, I actually bumped up the schedule and released this sooner so that you could get on the wait list for that, because it's a free training. And I know after listening to this conversation, it's going to be so good. So in this episode, Annie and I talk about her path immigrating from Kenya to Australia, and then after years in HR work, becoming a consultant and becoming a DEI coach. We talk about preventing burnout and anti-racism and social justice work and what we can do to bolster ourselves to continue this lifelong work, because it is lifelong. We talk about why we must start with our own inner work, that this isn't something we go outward to fix, but that we start within ourselves. Annie shares her experience at the intersection of faith and justice. And truly, this was the most impactful part of the conversation for me was Annie and I talking about our experiences with Christianity, with Jesus, and our understandings of grace and how it impacts social justice. Annie infuses grace and humanity into her DEI work. And I have a hunch that a lot of that comes from her experience in Christianity and her deep, deep faith, which was, again, you're going to hear about it. It's so beautiful. Annie generously shares with us the difference between inclusion, diversity, and equity to give us just the basics of what we're talking about here. And we talk about so many more things, mistakes white folks make when we try to hurry up and fix, how to unhook from the need to do it all today so that can be sustainable. We can be in this work in a way that is regenerative and is supportive for our humanity, and even what to do when we make mistakes. And so Annie offers such a generous conversation. I cannot wait for you to listen. And of course, after you're done listening, this episode is so important and so needed. Please share it on social media, tagging both Annie and I so that we can share it and we can see it and we can, you know, give you a virtual high five. And of course, if you enjoy it, please leave a 5-star review and let me know your favorite part in the comment section of the reviews on iTunes. So without further ado, let's dive in and listen to this conversation with Annie Jichiru. Beautiful. Well, Annie, we've been chatting just briefly before I hit record, and I interrupted and paused you because what you were saying, I knew I wanted to have people listening hear about. You were, to give some context, you were talking about immigrating to Australia and your journey becoming a DEI coach, moving out of corporate, and the George Floyd incident that happened that really awakened this desire for you to teach in a deeper way. And I was wondering if you could recap some of the things that you had shared with me about moving out of hospitality and corporate and moving into what you now do through coaching.
Yes. So moving from corporate, you know, having more than 15 years of human resource experience, and then stepping into the personal development and coaching industry, very much by, I wouldn't say by design. It was, you know, a conversation with a friend that led me, that piqued my interest, and I became very curious about, you know, this niche, this industry, and stepping into it and feeling very seen and heard through my studies, you know, becoming a certified life coach, and initially working with migrant women of color, And then, you know, the brutal murder of George Floyd happening. And for me, I just couldn't shake what I had seen. I had obviously seen a lot of police brutality against Black people in the United States. And there's something about being Black, regardless of where you are located in the world, whether you are living in the United States or myself here in Australia, there is just such a big feeling of how personal it is. You cannot not imagine what your life would be. And thinking of yourself being in that situation and just feeling it as a Black person in a very, very deep way. And so I felt I needed to do something with my platform. You know, storytelling has been my thing for quite some time, sharing good news stories, talking about representation a fair bit, saying that we do not see stories of people of color, particularly migrants who've come from Africa, being told in a positive light. Quite often it's told from a perspective of we're here because we've come here needing assistance, or we've come here on a refugee status. Whilst those stories exist, they're not the only stories, right? And so wanting to shed a light of the positive side of migrating, being here by choice, and wanting to make a positive difference. And so enter this really global issue that really opened a lot of eyes, particularly for white folks, as far as racism goes, as far as racial inequity in business, particularly. And so I hosted a panel discussion on racism and really just opened it wide for us to have that conversation. And for us here in Australia, it's a little bit different than the United States, Madison, because for us, it's a little bit taboo. Talking about race and racial issues, it's a little bit of a no-go zone. And it's an area where you have to really tread carefully because we're just not comfortable, Australians. Not comfortable talking about that. But having seen what had happened in the United States with George Floyd, it became an open discussion. It was an opportunity for us to begin to have these conversations of that elephant in the room that hadn't been addressed. And from there, from having that panel, I just felt this calling, this need to step into this from a business perspective, you know, supporting peers in my industry, coaches, about how to build businesses that are more inclusive, racial equity, representation in business. And so it's what has led me to where I am now as a DEI coach and consultant.
Something that really struck me that you were sharing before is your experience immigrating from Kenya to Australia and then moving into this space that you've said that you don't have the exhaustion Black Americans mm-hmm. have as you're moving into educating around DEI inclusion and representation. And I'm really curious, you know, what your experience has been like now that you're doing it, if that you feel like you've had the pushback that you were talking about, or if you're feeling the weight in a different way.
There hasn't been any pushback. If anything, people are, they're cautious. They're cautious in terms of this is something that I have only learned about this inequity. I didn't even know it existed. I did not know that I had just been serving people who look and sound like me from that white lens. And I'm only just being made aware of this. And so treading very carefully. And for me, I suppose, because my lived experience, I've called Australia home for over 20 years, my lived experience has been very different. I haven't lived in fear of my life as a Black woman. I haven't, you know, for us here in terms of discrimination, whilst it is there for people of color, it is not in your face. It is not something that is overt. It's something where it takes a time to actually realize, hang on, this might be a little bit unfair or different, and then pinning it down to it being, you know, an issue to do with race. But it is there, but it's very subtle. And so coming into this work, there isn't that exhaustion for me personally, because I'm stepping into this work in a different way from my lived experience being very different, not having that that anger, that pain, which I completely understand when it comes to those who are in this educating space, particularly those who have had a very, very different lived experience. And so coming into this work with wanting to do it with a lot of grace and kindness, coming from that calling in rather than calling out, simply because the lived experience I have had has been different. And I am finding that quite a number of my clients, the reason why they've gravitated to me and the work that I'm doing in my online course, where we have, you know, live coaching sessions as a group, is that they're finding that there's permission to make mistakes. There's permission to ask uncomfortable questions so that we can really get to the root of the why behind this, the why behind the issues that have emerged that really separate Black and white people. And so the permission to make mistakes and to learn, the ability to call in with grace and kindness, is really something that's resonating, that's quite different from perhaps what they have seen around them when it comes to getting into this DEI work, because it's work that can be confronting. It's work that can be a little bit overwhelming and fearful. The word that comes across a lot is fear. I'm afraid of saying the wrong thing. I'm afraid of making a mistake. I'm afraid of adding harm. And so being in a space where you are allowed to stumble, to fall, but to learn how to do it the way that it should be done, the right way. And again, right is different for many people. What might be okay for me may not be okay for another person. And then learning how to navigate that really difficult and nuanced conversation when it comes to, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion.
I really appreciate you naming that there's fear. And this is something that I've certainly had. Excuse me, my dog is with us. This is something that I've certainly had in my experience. The first way I really became aware that this was something that I was lacking in my business, I saw it in the world because I grew up quite close to Ferguson, which was one of the biggest incidents, or one of the biggest racial incidences happened really close to my hometown. And my parents grew up right by it. And so it was very charged where I grew up. And so I was aware, but in terms of representation in my business, Julie Parker, who is one of the ways that we met, was one of the people that really encouraged me to reach out to you, owns Beautiful You Coaching Academy. And Julie really, through Beautiful You, started trickling in the way that we could be being mindful of this. But it wasn't until I actually saw Danielle Laporte. I don't know if you're familiar.
Yes, it was a couple
years ago. She made some mistakes and didn't handle it so well, and was very publicly canceled. And that term is quite loose now, but called out very publicly. Yes. And I remember thinking, I don't know anything about what's wrong with this page that everyone's so upset about. Clearly I'm missing something. Mm-hmm. And I hired Lauren Alta, who I've interviewed, and she's a Black woman from America.
Yes,
who's really supported me. She's amazing. But it wasn't until that experience that I was held in a container where I was like allowed to make mistakes. And I am so grateful that was actually my first experience in the world of anti-racism, because I was terrified of hurting people. And I, even though I've tried not to, have and have continued to, even when I'm not trying to. And so what I'm hearing from a lot of people, all that to say, a lot of my clients who are white or white passing, is that they're really tired and burnt out this year with all of the things with the pandemic, anti-racism, and trying to maintain a level of being engaged in the work. And yet their personal lives are either, you know, difficult or work is difficult. And I'm wondering, how have you seen in the last year this way that you're supporting people help around the burnout aspect and help around not letting this really important thing fall off the table because we're at capacity in so many ways?
That's a beautiful question, Madison. And what I often say is that doing this work is lifelong. It's not something where you're trying to get to the finish line, Madison, where you're like, oh my gosh, I need to learn this. I need to sign up for this class. I need to be doing this all of the time. You've got to pace yourself. Otherwise, you are going to burn out for sure. And the last, 2020 and 2021 have been years like no other, unprecedented. We're living in times where it is just so different. And so we've got to pace ourselves. We've got to know that if I am committed to racial equity work, this is how I'm going to choose to do it. I'm going to pace myself, but I'm going to make it a part of my business, an integral part of my business. And this is how I choose to do it. And there are options there. And this is what I discuss in my program, represented with my clients, about how to do it in a way that it doesn't burn you out, but you're still staying in the conversation, so that when, unfortunately, we have another incident, you know, like what we've witnessed before and several times and continues to happen, that you're not scrambling yet again to find somebody to educate you. You're not scrambling again to go like, oh, let me have a look at my business. Where am I at? Am I, you know, representing? Am I doing this and the other? That you're constantly in that conversation, but in a way that is not burning you out, in a way that you can manage it. And that's really important to know that this is not a sprint. It is a marathon. It is lifelong work, and you need to pace yourself. And sometimes pacing yourself means taking a step back. And that's okay. That's okay. But not taking a step back to the point where you've disengaged with the conversation and you're not in any way, you know, participating long term, but you're taking a break to sort of catch your breath, and then you're coming back. And, you are in many ways keeping up with the conversation that's going on. Sometimes you might be doing it, you know, on a personal level. It's not something that everybody needs to know. You're not the one who's spearheading conversations. It would be great, but you just know your bandwidth. You know where you're at. And right now, my cup's a little bit empty, and I don't have that, what it takes to be able to spearhead this and have this conversation. But I am doing other things on a private level. I am still part of this conversation, but in a way that still honors who I am. And it will allow me to show up in even bigger ways as time goes by.
That feels so human. One of my trauma therapists, somatic practitioner, her name is Bridget. Something she says is that the train of trauma, or the train of emergency and urgency, moves so quick that it can be easy just to hop right on it whenever we're not regulated. And I think back to last year, even though I had done some work around diversity and inclusion, and I was aware enough to be being mindful, whenever George Floyd happened in the midst of pandemic and then the uprisings that happened, I noticed myself just hop on trains of emergency regarding call outs and call ins and immediate responses, and making more harm by trying to repair harm, because I wasn't taking the time and space to digest and integrate and make choices from a grounded place. It was just like, oh, should I make a mistake? I need to hurry up and fix it.
Yes.
Can sometimes cause more problems.
A lot of that. we saw a lot of that. It was so reactive of, oh my goodness, I did not know my business is not doing this. I'm going to go quickly create a scholarship program and that should fix everything for now. But, you know, the inner work hasn't been done. And so you can't rush learning. You can't rush getting into this work and doing it. And it always needs to start from a personal perspective before you can even touch your business. And that's a really important aspect of what I teach. You know, we've got to go through and do what I call a personal audit. You know, where are you at on this journey? Because everybody's at a different place. You know, for yourself, as you've said, you know, growing up next to Ferguson and knowing the inequality that exists between, you know, white folks and Black folks, having that awareness, but maybe not being fully aware about the impact for you from a business perspective now as an adult grown and not fully knowing how do I show up in a way that is serving not just white folks, but also be of service to, you know, people of color? How can I be a voice? How can I be, you know, a genuine ally and advocate? And so it is really doing that inner work. You can't skip that. You can't skip to wanting to fix. And that's where the reaction was coming from, you know, jumping on this trauma train and going like, okay, I need to do this. I need to do that. It really needs to come from a place where you are pacing yourself and starting with that inner work, that personal audit.
It really feels similar to in some of my programs that talk about deprogramming, like the programming we're given, and racism is programming that we're given. Mm-hmm. And whenever we just dive into it too quickly, like whether it's, I'll just say patriarchal programming is typically what I talk about in my work. And if we dive into it too quickly, the overwhelm hits and then there's inability to take sovereign action. And that can be shut down. It can be hypervigilance. And I actually want to talk about or ask about a lot of the women who listen to my podcast, a lot of the people who listen come from evangelical backgrounds where there's a lot of saviorism, a lot of we're going to go to Africa, the continent, and save these people, this colonizing mindset. And I see it trickle into our anti-racism work where we realize, and then we're going to fix it. Yes. And I'm wondering what your advice for those of us who have that tendency or that programming around saviorism, who are white folks, how we can slow down and see that from a different perspective.
Absolutely. In fact, the person who comes to mind is a gentleman by the name of Tim Wise, who is an activist. He's a white male activist for, you know, Black people and people of color and human rights, and really love his understanding of not centering yourself in this work, not making yourself that person who's coming in and saving the day. Like, oh my God, look at all the things that are so wrong in this space. We've got to go in and just help. The problem is when you go in and you're the one leading that conversation, is that it has a potential to change the agenda. You're going in thinking, this is what they need. This is the help that they need. This is how we're going to do it. Rather than letting those who are in the situation lead that conversation, this is what I think, this is what we need, really. Us as Black people leading that conversation and having white folks come along as allies to, you know, stand in solidarity, stand beside, stand behind sometimes to let us take that lead, because we know what we need. We know the things that have, where the opportunities lack. And so having that really acute awareness to allow, you know, Black folks to lead this conversation and for you to be there as that support is really essential. And it really, again, it's like a circle. It goes back to doing that inner work. So if you keep doing the inner work, you'll be coming in from that white lens going like, I need to jump in. I need to save the day. I know how I can help. And that's all, that's coming from a place where you potentially mean well, but just take a step back, chill out, and do that inner work. And in doing that inner work, you'll understand how you need to come in and be that essential ally who will help us move this conversation forward.
As you're saying it now, it feels so patronizing, right? To think like, oh, let me come in and help you. Yes. It feels so patronizing and, I mean, dehumanizing, obviously, but like talking to a child, not like talking to someone who mm-hmm. is sovereign and knows what's best for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Especially when you're the one who knows this is how the system works against. This is how the system works to, you know, keep people who come from this particular background in this position. You know, when you don't understand the dynamics, and obviously it takes time, you know, these are systems that have been this way for years and years and years. And so it's not a come in here one day to change things. It takes time to understand why was the system built like this? And that idea of I'm coming to fix things, it's not a broken system. It's a system that was built this way. So it is working the way it was intended to work. This is about shifting how things are supposed to be. It's completely undoing the system. So it's not about fixing the system. The system is not broken. It is working effectively. That is why, you know, those who have been marginalized are where they are at. And those opportunities are lacking, and that the discontents and the disparity that exists is from a system that is working effectively. So if you're coming in as a white person thinking, I need to fix this, it's not about fixing. It's really about shifting and undoing what's there. And that can't be done unless it's the people who have experienced it and who are at the receiving end who need to be the ones leading this conversation.
So for those who are listening, who are in the wellness space or in the coaching space or own a business, which is a lot like those categories are a lot of the people who listen to this show, or they are spiritual people and realizing how in at least American evangelical Christianity, not all of Christianity, but in that specific group, white supremacy is really an underlying fabric, really tethering that together, which I know personally was so realizing that was one of the things that my faith really had to come apart to be able to be rebuilt around. But for those who are realizing their business practices or the coaching industry or their spiritual practices have some roots in white supremacy and they want to start deconstructing that or infusing anti-racism, where do you recommend that they begin?
That is such a good question and such a big question when it comes to evangelical Christians, when it comes to white supremacy. Gosh, it is such a big one, and also one that is highly controversial. You know, this is where people really get upset with each other, where you've got, you know, the right wing, the left. And it has a potential to get really uncomfortable and really criticized. But here's the thing. I think when you take the time to educate yourself and allow yourself to come from an open mind is really, really important. And I often say educating yourself from the perspective of, how do I like to consume information? Am I somebody who likes to buy books and read? Am I somebody who likes to listen to a podcast like this and get some things deposited in me, you know, some seeds of knowledge just dropping at me? Or, you know, just depending on how you like to consume information. But I would start by that education piece, listening to people who don't look like you, listening to people who are coming from that marginalized background where there is absolutely inequity, and just listening, taking the time to listen, and perhaps even entertaining the fact that there could be some truth in what is being told, that what I have subscribed to may not have always been the right thing, that perhaps just questioning certain things, because when you look at your life and you look at where you've led what has led you to where you are right now, your business, and you just look at your practices, there are certain things that are so, will become so obvious to you that, okay, I am serving just white people. Why is that? Or when I look at my circle of friends, I just have white friends. Why is that? You know, and it will probably take you back to your childhood and, you know, the things that have now shaped your attitudes and your beliefs and, you know, your faith and certain things, and just beginning to realize this is what has made me into the person I am. And it has made me perhaps prejudiced to a particular group of people. I hold certain stereotypes. And this is because of the kind of lived experience I have had. How can I begin to undo that? How can I begin to be more open and listen to others who are not necessarily like me and have my lived experience and be able to serve from a place where I am serving as many people as I can, from a place of true integrity, that I am advancing not just a group that looks and sounds like me, but I am also wanting to better, you know, as coaches, we're really in the wellness industry, we're in the business of wellness. We're in the business of trying to, you know, better people's lives, to help them reach, you know, their goals, that for their betterment. And in doing that, really questioning, do I just want to work with, you know, people who just look and sound like me? Or have I been missing something here? What is it that I am missing? What personal work do I need to understand here? And that's where it begins. Because when it comes to white supremacy, when it comes to evangelical Christians, there is, it's so big. But I think just taking the time to even listen to a podcast like this begins to deposit things in you where you begin to ask questions. And I'm sure that would have been a similar story to you, Madison, where you've been in spaces, you've gone like, oh, wait, hang on. I didn't know that. And is this a truth? And you begin to just dig a little bit deeper until you get to a point where you're like, hang on, there's something amiss here.
And that was certainly the case in my experience with really radical evangelical Christianity and deconstructing that. And I want to, you know, I'm someone who has really strong faith. And so I think when people hear about, you know, deconstructing and leaving Christianity and all of these things, they can tend to put people into a camp of what that means, you know, about political stances and all of those things. But this isn't, at least to me, this isn't political work. This is human work.
Yes, that's it.
It has gotten, it's gotten to be, at least from the communities I'm in, like, oh, anti-racism work is a left-leaning thing, which is so surprising because understanding how people have different opportunities, the way that we're excluding people is just human. And really to me would be the core of Christianity if I was to find, you know, yes. Jesus loved immigrants. Jesus was an immigrant and was a person of color. And so it's so funny that we can make that this very small thing when really this is a human issue.
It really is. And you've hit the nail on the head right there, Madison, by saying this is a human issue. It is made into something that's political. And people go like, you know what, I don't get into politics. I'm not into politics. So you kind of wash your hands off. Whereas this is central. It's about human lives. It's about human dignity. It affects us all. And a lot of times we think that, you know, when it comes to matters of racism, it's just Black people who are impacted. No. Absolutely not. There is a cost to white folks as well when it comes to racism. And I think also the media has played a role in how we look at things when it comes to, you know, Christianity, evangelicals, and painting a picture that I have come to believe, as a Christian myself, that I have come to believe is not one that we all subscribe to as Christians. There is, you know, a story that is very right-wing and one that paints Christianity as evangelicals as a very radical. highly, you know, that you have to be a certain way. You have to tick a certain box. You're in this space and you've got to be a certain way. And there is no opportunity for mistakes. You know, there is no room for being, what is it, liberal? It's just the right way, the right, and I put, you know, in quotes, the right way of doing things. And I don't think that's how it is. I think, you know, Christianity, my personal understanding is about love. It's about kindness. It's about extending to others that kind of love, that kind of acceptance. And I think there's so much judgment, negative judgment, that then paints the Christian faith into something that a lot of people do not want to be part of. And I think it has a lot to do with how it has been painted in the media, and a lot of people getting very uncomfortable even talking about their faith, because the minute you say you're a Christian, you're already put into a certain box where you're like, oh, so you're the people who don't, you know, condone this or accept this, you're judgmental, you're this and the other. And that's not true. That's not true for all Christians. That is absolutely not true. And I think a huge thing that is missing, a huge ingredient, is that we are not really showing the love of Jesus as it was intended. And that's just my own personal, belief, is that I don't think we are really showing who Jesus truly was in how we are operating now, and how the, you know, evangelical Christians are, and how it is really, there's so much white supremacy in it. I don't subscribe to that at all.
I feel emotional and my heart feels so open hearing you talk about this, because my roots, I mean, I was so deeply in evangelical Christianity, but my heart was for God. Like I really loved the Christ story and that way. And the concept of grace is the concept that fuels my life. And also my study of the Bible was so rich. And so I can't undo the knowledge I have of that. It still informs everything. Yes. It's still the language I speak, the spiritual language I speak, if you will.
Yes.
And if I had to choose like a label, which I don't do because of the reasons you said, the exact reasons you said of what would it, the label Christian goes against all of the ways that I want to say that I am in the world.
Yeah.
But the beliefs I hold about people and about compassion and about like the last will be first, they're all Christian beliefs. And it's so, it is so complex. I live in a very conservative area. It's, I don't live in St. Louis anymore. It's 97% white, mostly evangelical Christian. And the kind that would like vote against my right to get married, you know, as a queer person. And so it's not the kind of Christian that I would subscribe to, but it is, it really, these conversations really break my heart, because I think about who Jesus was and what he would have stood for and what he flipped tables for, all of those things. I'm like, this is the work. This is the Christ work, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And oh my gosh, it's so interesting, you know, how you say that that's what he was flipping tables for, you know, even having his feet get washed by somebody who was, you know, a prostitute. And many questioning, the Pharisees questioning, does he not know who she is? And it's so, I feel like we're living in those times where people are being judged. You know, you've been judged by who you are and your identity, and you're being banished or discriminated against because of the label that you carry. Whereas I think love should be extended to every human being. That's what I feel we should be subscribing to, but it there is a feeling of it should only be for certain people. It's not for all. there's a certain group, elite, if you like, that should only be the ones who receive this kind of love, this kind of treatment, and they're the ones who are doing the right thing. I think grace should be extended to all. And really bringing it back to this work of, you know, racial equity, I think we should extend grace to each other as we are learning, as we are stumbling together. I think we should just extend that love and grace for each other and be able so that we can bring people along on this journey. You know, our Ruth Bader Ginsburg, right? She said this quote that I often think about, that, you know, when you believe in something and you want to bring people along, do it in a way that will want them to come along with you. And I think that's such a powerful thing. And it's really about subscribing to how do you want, as you're doing this work, people to be part of it. If you're doing this work in a way that makes people feel angry about themselves, or like they've made a mistake, or like, you know, they are part of this problem and they should really, really, really rethink themselves, I think just being a little bit open to allowing people to come as they are and to learn through the process is such an important ingredient from my perspective to getting as many along in this journey, because we can't do it alone. This is not something for just Black people to do and people of color. We need everyone. We need white folks in here with us. And so I think once we begin to realize that and extending that grace, I think we'll begin to see a shift in how people are more willing to come on this journey and learn and stumble and learn and fall and learn.
You know, Annie, it's so funny. I'm thinking back of the last like 2 years where I've really been involved in these conversations and where they've gotten really heated online. And I think it's mostly been white women who have tried to be so unkind and cancel and the things that feel the worst about being on the receiving end of getting it wrong. And I've actually not had many Black people call me out in a way that was harmful to me at all. It's actually been mostly white women who are jumping on the train of emergency and then getting very upset. And sometimes, you know, there was harm that I caused. Sometimes it was just social media stuff that happens. But I'm curious, for those who are listening, who are white, who have been involved in these conversations and have people in their life they disagree with, how, as a Black woman, how would you like us to go about being in relationship to one another? Because you're leading this in a different way than I've seen a lot of white women interact with each other about this.
That is a great question. I love this question, Madison, because I think as a white woman, remember where you were when you started this journey. Remember when you did not know what terms or what how to refer to certain things. When you got into this work, you started from the very beginning of, number one, unlearning what you've potentially known to be the right thing. And you've gotten into this journey of learning things in a certain way. And so remember that, just coming into this work and remembering everyone is at a different space, at a different place of learning and offering that grace, because there's something that exists that is that toxic perfection, you know, oh, it should be this way, or you're doing it wrong. And you just get called out and dragged in a way that just makes you feel like, I am not going to be part of this conversation. I'm just going to be silent. And once you become silent, then we've lost a really key voice and people who need to be part of this conversation. So my advice would be, just remember your early days when you were getting into this work, when you were learning, when you were stumbling, when you did not know what meant what, but you learned. you really did. So afford that to others so that they can come and join you in this really important journey. I think we need to be gentle with each other. And looking at what's the long-term benefit. It's not just the right now, get it right now. What's a long-term benefit? And I also want to mention this, that there is room for calling out. There is room. There are people who need to be called out. You know, it's not just a calling in and just a grace thing. And that's important. I believe that's how we do work in a sustainable manner. And calling out, I don't think is sustainable. However, there is room for calling out. There are people who are beyond being called in. There are people who need to be called out for what they've done. And perhaps they've been given chance after chance after chance, and they still keep making the same mistakes. Yes, there is room for that, and they do need to be called out.
I appreciate you naming that, because I've had so many conversations about call in versus call out and how they've become convoluted, and is it a call in if you don't know the person and all these different things. But when it comes to people with lots of power, lots of influence who we don't have relationships with, and I'm curious if you have an example of anything that you've seen that you felt was an appropriate and necessary call out versus what a call in tends to look like whenever you're doing it.
I think calling out, we probably see it more in the public domain when it comes to influencers or people who are in positions where they ought to know better. You know, they have probably hired DEI educators in their space. They're trying to do better, yet they keep getting it wrong. And I've seen instances where they've been called out, been really called out, you know, by many Black and white folks calling them out. And, you know, sometimes it, we've seen an apology go out and so forth, or other times it's just been like silence. I'm not going to say anything. I stand behind what I did. And so those are examples of, you know, calling out where they ought to know better. You know, they're in positions of influence and they ought to know better. And this is not a new thing. This is a conversation they are very well aware of. And so calling out in that regard is, you know, you feel like it's warranted. They need that wake up call. And to many, it may not even be a wake up call. It's just an exhaustion of, we keep saying this and this person keeps doing that. So that's an example of where a call out would be, you know, where we've seen a call out being done. Calling in is perhaps, you know, in public spaces where somebody has come in and said something and you don't agree with them. And I think it's just saying, hey, what you've said is potentially has this impact. I don't know if you've, you know, taken the time to think about that, but this is the impact of what you're saying and what it has on this particular group of people. That's a calling. You know, you're kind of, you know, you're correcting in a gentle way. You're not just calling them out and saying, you ought to know better, you know, you this and the other. You're just really saying, this is the impact of what you've said, and this is what it could be done. And for those who are called out, and for those who are called in, I think it's so important to just take a step back and just really, you know, appreciate that and just say, I didn't realize that. Thank you for pointing that out. And I'm learning. I'm quietly here learning, and I will do better. And a lot of times when people apologize, when people say, I'm learning, or I will do better, a lot of folks say, okay. Or, yeah, we will remember that. We will remember you said that you will do better, and they will hold you to account. But I think one of the best medicine when it comes to being called out and being called in is to acknowledge that and to just take that step back and, you know, be grateful for it and do the work of really, yes, learning, doing better.
I think something that I've noticed in myself as I've been called in, I haven't been called out in a, you know, cancellation public way. I don't know if I'm unapproachable enough to need that at this point. But is that my ability to be with the fact that someone's upset with me and to be able to self-regulate in those moments of not, again, jumping on that train of emergency or needing to fix it, but to be able to be okay enough to take responsibility and to see the situation clearly while someone's either hurt or angry or upset, or we have a difference. Because whenever I wasn't able to be with anyone being upset with me and I had too much shame, it just made the situation so much worse. And then either shut me down or I moved into the savior fixing mode, which was, again, not helpful for anyone. Mm-hmm. So I'm just reflecting that capacity to be, just be like, okay, this person, I've caused harm and someone's upset with me, which we can practice just for those listening, not in racially charged dynamics. Like, we get to practice that with our partners and our friends and our kids and like all of these other areas where people might, we might have hurt people. So I am realizing just, you know, we're getting to this part in the conversation and there might be people listening who have some basic questions unanswered. And so would you mind just answering some really simple questions that might seem obvious, but for those who maybe haven't started this work?
Yes, absolutely.
I want to know the difference between inclusion, diversity, and equity. DEI.
All right. So diversity is all about our collective differences, the things that make us different. Sometimes it's the physical things that we can see, like gender, like race, and some like disability, the disabilities that we can actually see, some are obviously invisible. And then it goes on to things like we cannot see, you know, maybe social economic status, you know, education, faith. And so diversity is all our collective differences, the things that make us different from each other. Inclusion is all about being seen, being heard, being held, even. I like the description that's been given, and I forget who gave this description, but they talk about the difference between diversity and inclusion. And diversity is being invited to the party. Inclusion is being asked to dance at the party. And I think that's such a beautiful, you know, differentiator, such a beautiful way of looking at it, because we can be in a group where it's diverse, but am I really included? When you think of a corporate table where you have diverse people represented, are you really included when you put in your feedback? Or when you put in your two cents, so to speak, is it being taken into account? That's what inclusion is. And equity. Equity is perhaps one of my favorite of the three of them, because equity cannot exist without diversity and inclusion. You actually need diversity and inclusion to have equity there. And equity is when you are addressing the individual needs of people, when you're meeting each individual need. And I'd like to define equity in comparison to equality. So being able to define the two so you can have an even greater understanding of what equity is. So equality is when we level the playing ground, right? When we're trying to ensure that everybody is being treated equally. And we've seen that a lot when it comes to gender equity, where we are fighting for the same rights as men. But sometimes when it comes to equality, it's not exactly what we need because it doesn't address our individual needs. Whereas with equity, it addresses the individual needs. So you and I might be in the same organization, but your needs are different, Madison. Maybe you're able to climb that corporate ladder, but perhaps for me, there's some barriers there. And that's where equity comes into play. Equity comes in to address whatever individual needs I may have that allow me to step up the ladder. So equity really addresses the individual needs that somebody has. And it's not just about equalizing the playing ground for the sake of it. It's really about addressing what is your individual need and ensuring that that is met.
It reminds me of something I've seen you posting about, and I'm not sure if this masterclass will be available whenever this is launched. Hopefully people will be able to get on a wait list for it, but you've been promoting your masterclass around scholarships. I actually think you've hosted it already.
Yes, yes, I hosted that. Yes, it was all about creating safe and successful scholarship programs.
Will you host it again?
I will. Look, I was testing it out. It's a conversation that's been happening with a lot of people in my space, just going like, you know, scholarships. I'm putting together a scholarship. And there's almost been that trigger reaction this is a way to be inclusive. I have a scholarship program. And having been one who has undertaken a few scholarship opportunities, seeing how they can be done better. There's so mm-hmm. much room for improvement, and seeing some that have been done well, but there's mm-hmm. more often room for improvement because they're being done as a way of trying to address an issue without really understanding what kind of space I first need to create in order to call in those kind of scholarship recipients that I'd like to serve. So that is something I am definitely looking forward to running again, because it is something that is of great interest to a lot of people, absolutely.
Yes, I bring it up because something that you posted in one of your Instagram posts really spoke to me, and I'm equating it to equity. So you might maybe tell me if mm-hmm. I'm off base here, but that you might be giving away a scholarship to Black, Indigenous, or people of color, mm-hmm. and your program might not meet their needs or be catered to what those people would want, or it might be causing even more harm by promoting a scholarship to people mm. who you can't support. And I mm-hmm. just thought, wow, I in the past have done that. And it was one of those acts of wanting to make everything, you know, represented mm. where I wasn't considering that I might not have what those people need.
Yes. And I think this was very much coming from a place of cautioning. Yes, of course, you can put out a scholarship for those groups of people. In fact, we're encouraging that to happen, but do so when you understand the barriers and the challenges that they face. Because if a person of color was to come into your container and you're wondering why they're not showing up the way they're supposed to show up, or the way others are showing up, why they're not so visible, why you're working on, you know, their business and you're like, why do they hesitate when it comes to this sort of thing? Why are they? But when you understand some of the, you know, challenges, the barriers, the setbacks that people of color face, you're coming into this space holding container with the ability to be able to have more impact in their life, to have that awareness at a more deeper level and be able to meet them in a much more deeper way that allows them to, with time, open up and maybe feel a little bit safer, because there's always that feeling of being comfortable, being uncomfortable. That doesn't mean that you're safe. That doesn't mean that you're, you know, but you're just being uncomfortable. But if you can get into a point where as a person of color, you're beginning to feel included, you know, seen, held, heard, they get me, you know, this person gets me. And so you begin to just let down a few things because there's a trust factor there. You've got to really be in a position where you are understanding those barriers and challenges for the trust to really be cultivated in that relationship. And as we know, coaches and coachees, that kind of relationship is extremely powerful, but there's got to be trust. If there's no trust, then it will not be a fulfilling experience for both parties.
Yeah, thank you for naming that. I have had situations with clients where I've had to cause harm and have had to repair simply because of the very things you're saying, not deeply understanding the obstacles and not understanding. Mm-hmm. Like I was thinking I'm making it all equal, but I wasn't making it equitable because I wasn't understanding the specific challenges.
That's it. Not making it equitable. Absolutely.
Yeah. I have one more question about this before we get to rapid fire, because sure. I mean, I could actually ask you many more questions, but I will do that another time because I'm so appreciative of your extra time here with us. I want to know, for those who are in business or are coaches or in the wellness space, and they're realizing through this conversation, like, shoot, maybe I've made a mistake. Maybe I've caused harm. What do I do now? What do they do now?
You know what? Once you get to that realization, that is a good place. That is a good thing, because there are many of people who go through life not realizing any harm or, you know, any issues they're causing. So it's a good thing. Don't beat yourself up about it. It's a good thing, but do something about it. Educate yourself. And I know we hear this a lot from educators saying, educate yourself. And where do you begin? I say, start with somebody who you admire, who you respect, who you feel like your values are aligned and you want to learn from. So do your homework, get out there and see who is somebody who I would love to learn from, who will hold this kind of space that I feel is necessary for me. So that now that I've realized this is the kind of harm I may have caused or are causing, I want to do better. And where will I get that opportunity to do that?
Beautiful. I love the focus on values, because I see so many people who have experienced burnout in this area because they weren't learning from teachers who valued the same things. And there was a disagreement or whatever it was. And there's a shutdown, as opposed to finding someone who can meet those people where they are specifically, and have challenging conversations that don't leave us just exiting as if this isn't an important conversation to continue having, like you said, our whole life.
Absolutely.
Well, before we get into rapid fire, where can people find you?
So you can find me on Instagram. That is where I post, tools and tips to help you build a business that is, you know, culturally and racially diverse, inclusive, and equitable. So you can find me on Uplifting Studios TV. That's my handle. Or you can head over to my website, upliftingstudios.com.au.
Amazing. And I have numerous friends who are either have or are currently in represented your program.
Yes.
And which is again why I reached out, because I'm just hearing so many like raving reviews, people who are just like, this is amazing. And so I'm just thankful to those people who connected me with you and told me to follow you, because it's been like, even just the couple posts about scholarships, I'm like, I'm changing the way I'm doing this. And I didn't even go to the masterclass. Like, I'm going to be going to the next one. So let's dive into rapid fire, because I could literally chat with you all day long. The first you've already answered, but what is your spiritual background?
A Christian. I am a born again Christian and I love Jesus.
Beautiful. How do you know when you know?
There's peace. There's peace. There's peace. There is peace.
What identities have you had to let go of to own your fullness today?
Perfection. That I wanting to identify as somebody who is doing things right and being perfect. I've had to let that go. And it's not like I let it go that day and it ended there. I think it's a letting go on repeat. Letting go of the fact that I do DEI work very differently. And that's okay, because I am being true to who I am. So letting go of the identity that I have to be in a certain way to do it and to be successful.
Beautiful. What are you most enjoying learning right now?
I think as a mother, just seeing the world through my children's eyes, especially given the kind of current situation for us in a pandemic. I live in Australia and the East Coast has really been hit with COVID. We're in a current lockdown. And just seeing the carefree, the curiosity, the genuineness in just the purity of life. I love that about motherhood and seeing life through my little children's eyes.
Beautiful. What does grace mean to you?
Grace is unmerited favor. I did not deserve it, yet I got it.
Beautiful. I just have chills because that phrase means a lot to me as well. The next question's not so deep. It's, what's your coffee shop order?
Well, they can't see this, but I am a hot chocolate kind of girl. I don't do coffee. I hardly do teas. Hot chocolate is my go-to.
I love that. I would love that for myself, although that is not the way it is over here. I'm like, wow, I'm so inspired. Well, the final question, Annie, is what do you want?
For me, I really do want a world where we can see ourselves represented, every one of us, in particular Black people, in positions of leadership, in positions of influence, in positions of business ownership. And that's why I do what I do, to raise that awareness so that we can just have that needed representation, because we will all be better for it.
Goodness, that conversation with Annie was so good and so easy to sink into. I felt like I could talk to her for so much longer. I know I said that actually in the interview, but it felt like we could talk and talk and talk and talk, and hopefully we get that opportunity. As you're settling in and finishing this episode, I wanted to remind you about her upcoming workshop on September 21st, Your Business and Representation. You can go to upliftingstudios.com.au/representation to learn more about that. And I did mention that she has other ongoing training, such as how to build a scholarship offering and so many other ways that she is supporting people who are entrepreneurs to intentionally do this DEI work in ways that are infused with grace, infused with humanity, and that are fit for longevity, because there's a lot going on in the world right now. And I really appreciate how Annie acknowledges that and infuses that into the work that she does. And if you are going to some of the free trainings, I might just see you there myself. Well, thank you so much for being here and listening to the show today. Don't forget to share it or leave a review if you absolutely loved it, and I will see you next time.